in the light of truth, of love, leak out of it.
To find and to share.
It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song. Our reading today is special to my heart, from the Buddha. Believe nothing, no matter where you read it or who has said it. Not even if I have said it, unless it agrees with your own reason and your own common sense.
Good morning, everyone. It's nice to be here on a morning of magic, isn't it? Let's collect ourselves for a moment of prayer, shall we? Cross our fingers, pray for some rain. I thank you, God, for most this amazing day, for the leaping, greenly spirit of trees in a blue, true dream of sky, and for everything which is infinite, which is natural, which is yes. I, who had died, am alive again today, and this is the sun's birthday. This is the birthday of life, and love, and wings, and of the gay, great happening, illimitably, Earth. E.E. Cummings. Diverted to words on a page today, so forgive me for that. When I heard the phrase honest religion used in this community, and the first time I came here, it really struck me in a powerful way. It really strikes me today as being an essential idea. And today I'd like to share some thoughts about what I believe the idea of honest religion, why it's so important. And later this month, when I come back on the 23rd, I'll be talking a great deal more about what I think that looks like. What does it mean to have honest religion? To practice honest religion in the 21st century. Let me state this really strongly right at the beginning. I believe that honest religion may be humanity's best and perhaps last chance of really saving itself. And more on that in a few moments. But I'd like to start by being really honest. Isn't it amazing to many of us here today that we're still struggling with ideas about faith and religion in the year 2009? Isn't it quite amazing? Now, I'm taking it for granted that most of us would self-identify as spiritual or religious progressives, right? And who among us has not wondered to ourselves sometimes, honestly, when will all of that go away? Right? And when I'm talking about that, I'm not talking about old-time religion, evangelical, radical, or even reactionary religion. I'm talking about religion itself. Be honest. How many of us refuse to use the label religious, right? When we talk about ourselves, and I find myself slipping into this a lot, don't we prefer spiritual? Isn't it easier? Isn't it more socially acceptable in the circles that we circulate in? Doesn't it fit a little more comfortably? I know that I fall back on that time and time again. And don't we all have secular friends who see religion as the root of all evil and wish it would simply go away now, forever? In fact, there's a new and very assertive army of atheists out there have turned their disbelief into a cottage industry where they delight in and profit in shadow boxing with fundamentalists. They're on the bestseller list every week. Now, the truth is, in that debate, both sides are delighted the other exists. The atheists of the academy, with their arch disdain, are the perfect foil for the fundamentalists. And the fundamentalists are only too happy to have the atheists banging at the gates. Right? Why? Because fear-driven faith needs visible enemies. The same is true in politics. All of this sells books, gets a lot of votes, and fills pews. But is there any real honesty in that debate, this very public current debate between the atheists and the fundamentalists? Let's listen in on a few of them, shall we? Here's a quote from our fellow Austinite, Dr. Steven Weinberg, the Nobel Prize-winning physicist. Okay? Religion is an insult to human dignity. With it, with or without it, you'd have good people doing good things and evil people doing bad things. But for good people to do bad, it takes religion. For good people to do bad, it takes religion. Really, Dr. Weinberg, religion is the only thing that makes good people do bad? What about crushing poverty? What happens when love is betrayed? What about patriotism? Or what happens when good people throw verbal hand grenades at traditions that others revere? Seems to me we offer each other all sorts of temptations to shed our goodness. Some actually delight in that sport, evidently. Here's another quote, this one from one of our favorites, Jerry Falwell. If you're not a born-again Christian, you're a failure as a human being. You know, I won't even bother with a retort on that one. Let's just move on, shall we? So on and on it goes, right? The fundamentalists keep insisting that there's an intervening God who orders every hair upon our heads and who wrote the demise of the dodo bird into history before there were such things as dodo birds in history. And the atheist insists that all religion, even progressive religion, is a mirror of fearful, primitive minds that demand fairy tales. No aspersion on the kids. Demand fairy tales to deal with the terrors of existence. They say we all need that all we need is logic and reason, that if we would only educate ourselves, the long march of progress will someday surely purge us of every irrational impulse. Don't you long for that day? Love itself, I suppose, will lie dissected on a petri dish, understood by its chemical code. Is that honest? Really? Good luck with that mathematical equation that will answer every problem. My hunch is that mystery will never, ever curl up its toes and expire in a laboratory somewhere. Or for that matter, will it go extinct? We'll always have to cope with mystery. A point of real interest for us, though, in this debate is that some of the new atheists, like the author Sam Harris, who wrote the book End of Faith, hold religious moderates up for special scorn. Get ready for this, religious moderates. Special scorn for you. They argue that religious moderates provide cover and context for the radicals. Now, actually, on this one point, I'll concede to Harris. Oh, well. For example, nearly every liberal, progressive Christian I know feels queasy about mouthing the Nicene Creed, or one of its watered-down versions that's still used in tens of thousands of churches across the nation every Sunday, and yet millions of them do it. They mouth it, declaring before their children, their faith in third-century concepts of the divine that fly into the face of reason, science, and good old common sense. When we recite ancient creeds with our fingers crossed behind our back, we're on our way down that slippery slope where moderation winks and nods at fundamentalism. It's true. Cover and context. Sam Harris does have a point. So where does this leave us? In this place, and in our search for honesty. Do we dispense with all beliefs that cannot be proved by physical evidence? That's a good question. Or do we just go spiritual in the vaguest sense, hoping that the new age will provide the salvation that old certainties can no longer deliver? In some ways, don't you feel we're right back at the beginning, where I began? Don't we all wish that sometimes this would all just go away? This circle? Now listen, I've struggled with this for years, and I have an answer, a personal answer for you this morning. No. I don't wish all of that will go away. Now, in part, and in the interest of honesty, that is because I know that it never will go away. It never will go away. And wishing it would just go away is just as delusional as believing in virgin birth. It is. Sorry, Dr. Weinberg and Mr. Harris, it ain't gonna happen. Mark Lela, who's the author of a great book, it's called The Stillborn God, really digs deeply into the prevalent attraction of theocracy. And it's still prevalent in the world, people. In it, he writes this: when the urge to connect is strong, passions are high, and fantasies are vivid, the trinkets of our modern lives are impotent amulets against political intoxication. Wow. The trinkets of our modern lives. Religion is not going away. People are hungry, and sometimes desperate for that single answer that answers it all. What are the trinkets Mr. Lela is referring to? You're not going to like this. You're not going to like it. We could accept the trinkets being, you know, TiVo-ing, but he's talking about the bequest of the Enlightenment itself. Liberalism, in the classical sense, reason, and our notions of progress. That's what he's talking about. Trinkets compared to the passion stirred up by theocrats. He argues these are impotent amulets when the scales have been tipped and passion and rage are unleashed. And he's right. He is right. He argues that classical liberalism is the exception to the rule. We are the exception in human history. Our progressive little world is the odd man out, and it is imperiled. So how could I not want religion to go away? Right? barbarians are at our gate. But here's the second part of my answer, the no. I don't want it to go away because I believe that honest religion is neither an evolutionary dead end or a suicide pact. I believe that honest religion is our last best hope to withstand the ever-present threat from that other shore that Mr. Leland describes, where alienation, passion, and fantasy are being stoked at this very moment into a rage. The truth is that honest religion can't inoculate us from every danger in the world. That's the problem with every religion that promises ultimate deliverance, right? They can't deliver. They can't. But honest religion can help us help one another through the perils we face. We can build a shining example if we hew to honest religion. And we can help one another. So, how will all of that work? Don't you want to know? I do. I really do. I want to take a moment here. I'm really a word person. I really like to look at the origins of words. And I know you all have heard all this before. But take a moment to consider the word origin of the words religion. There are actually two theories about where that word comes from. Both very legitimate. One holds that it comes from the Latin religare, which means to bind together. You can see that. It's a binding together of concepts about the world. It's a binding together of community. Some people say, yeah, it's a bind, but a binding together. That's powerful. The other says it comes from the word religio, reverence. Reverence. I think what we need is a fusion of these things that only a powerful, reverent bond in the form of honest religion can sustain us, bind us, strengthen us for the challenges of the 21st century. We need the binding together, that acute awareness of our interdependence, right? We are bound together, even with those on the distant shore. We also need the tempering and, yes, humbling impact, the force of reverence in our lives. What does this look like in practice and here on the ground, in this place? Well, this is the one thing I think I really want to leave you with, if you remember nothing else from this. Honest religion must make demands of us. It must make demands of us. I had a conversation some years ago with University of Texas professor Paul Woodruff. Paul, as probably a lot of you know, wrote a beautiful book called Reverence. Got him on Bill Moyer's show, and it's a beautiful little book. And I was inviting Paul to come be a part of a conversation, a show I was producing on spirituality. You know, I thought that would be an acceptable word to Paul, an academic. You know, I wasn't going to go with the R word. I was coming in the back door, spirituality. I was shocked, absolutely shocked, when he bristled at that word. He just reared up. And he said that coldly, I reject spirituality. Whoa. Why is that, Paul? He said, it's a conceit. It demands nothing of you. I don't want to cast aspersion on the word spirituality. But spiritualities that are disposable, that are the fad of the moment, that live on bookshelves, don't make demands on us, do they? We toss them away when it becomes inconvenient. I don't have time for you right now. You know, I practice yoga. I'm a Buddhist meditationer. I believe in spirituality, but I don't believe in spirituality that is no more real than the wisp of smoke that disappears that quickly. Shouldn't honest religion demand our attention? I've talked with you about this before. Paying attention is the most countercultural thing you can do in 21st century America. It is. But real religion should demand our attention 24/7. If it is to be a religion that really binds our worldview, holds us together as a community, awakens reverence within us, and helps us to actually embody it, to live it, then yes, it has to demand our attention. But to what end? Right? To what end? This is personal, but first and foremost, to me, I think the test of honest religion should be whether it actively helps us to become better people. What does that mean? To be kinder, to be more compassionate, to be more patient, more generous, and more grateful. Honest religion should have one great purpose: simply nurture human goodness. We need it more than ever in the world. A goodness that attracts goodness to it, that inspires reverence and awakens that deep gratitude that is so often slumbering in us. Only through human goodness can we ever hope to be saved. And now, with our planet itself being endangered, we need goodness enacted more than ever. This is the real promise of honest religion. My friend Michael Benedict says, God is the good we do. I say, amen. That is honest. An honest religion should also be humble, because none of us will ever be purely good, and there will always be a need for humility. You know, nobody wants to be the do-good on the throne, issuing goodness forth. That often leads you know where. We need humility, as well as a pretty well-developed theology of forgiveness and contrition together. Forgiveness and contrition. It's all right. I'm sorry. I failed. I did wrong. It's a really difficult balancing act, but an honest religion should remind us of both our imperfections and help to sustain our aspirations simultaneously. You know? Be humble, but keep reaching. Keep reaching. An honest religion should also, very importantly, make sense. Common sense. Hence the quote from Buddha earlier. While our humility should remind us that there are things that we can never know, there is no reason to embrace supernatural theories that fly in the face of our first-hand experience of everything. No reason. The quote from Buddha says better than I could, "Believe nothing, no matter where you read it or who has said it. Not even if I have said it, unless it agrees with your own reason and your own common sense." Another way to say this is that honest religion should not require trampolines, theological trampolines. Sure, it should appeal to our heads and to our hearts. It should speak to that longing in here that is so hard to articulate. And sometimes you really can't reason it. But its real business is in helping us to ask better questions and to live better lives, not in making up myths about crystals or how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, which was a big apparent preoccupation in the Middle Ages. Go figure. Speaking of dancing, I believe that an honest religion should speak to our bodies as well as our heads, shouldn't it? Enacting or embodying our reverence is an essential part of honest religion. I recently returned from a long trip to Turkey, where the call to prayer echoed across the cities 5 times a day. Imagine that. Stopping your life 5 times a day to bow, to kneel, to declare your intention, the first and most important step in the ritual, to say thank you, to wish peace for your brothers to the left and to the right, to put your shoulders next to each other, to feel that common bond of humanity. Let me tell you, there were times when I witnessed that, or on the beautiful occasion when I was invited to participate in that, where I felt really inadequate. Where was my ritual of thanksgiving 5 times a day? Okay. Let me be clear and honest about the call I feel in my heart right now. I do want to stand shoulder to shoulder with my brothers and my sisters, to bow, to kneel and pray with them. I do. I feel that call in my heart. But when I do that, I want to speak in words that reflect the realities of the world as we see it and experience it today in the 21st century. Frankly, I really do long for this kind of honest religion. And I believe if it existed as a living community, a real binding together of brothers and sisters who practice goodness and shared reverence, it could, by example and deed, save the world. I'll have a great deal more to say about what all this might look like in the ground, on the ground, in practice, on August 23rd. But for now, I'll close with a simple, forgive me, challenging thought. The real question for those seeking an honest religion is this: would we honor it? How would we respond to it if it sprang to life right here in front of us? Would we embrace it, or, inconvenienced by its demands, would we come to wish that it too would simply go away? Thank you.
We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we hold in our hearts until we are together.